You're listening to Empower, the show that inspires you to live your best life with peace and purpose. Here is your host, Clayton Morris.
Hey everyone, I'm Clayton Morris. Thank you so much for listening to Empower. You know, when I decided to start this podcast, I wanted to help people and I really wanted to change lives with this show. You know, produced weekly, I wanted the impact of these episodes to not be about people selling things or hawking products, but really diving deep into transformative talks that could empower you to improve your life. Whether you're dealing with stress, anxiety, you're stuck in a job that you're not interested in and you want that inspiration to break free, you've been living with self-loathing, self-doubt, whatever it is, you've had this story that you've become so addicted to throughout your life that now is the time to break it. That's what this podcast is all about. So thank you for subscribing, but I really wanted to kick off the podcast with an amazing guest. And when I say amazing, I'm not using that term lightly. Today's guest on the show is Byron Katie. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with Byron Katie, I learned about her from Dr. Wayne Dyer. She, years ago, was in the throes of depression, on the verge of suicide, and basically had an awakening. Now, that awakening has led to multiple books. It's led to her walking through prisons amongst the most hardened of criminals and changing their lives. She does a simple four-step process called The Work. It's four questions that will literally change your life. When I tell you she's changed thousands of people's lives, you know, Oprah has featured her. In fact, in this interview, you'll hear we talk about Oprah. She is really a sage living amongst us. So I would encourage all of you to pick up her book, Loving What Is. Visit her website, thework.com. But most importantly, I want you to sit back and I just want you to soak up this interview. And I hope you listen to it multiple times, because when you are in the presence of someone like Byron Katie, it is magical. And it really has the power to change your life. I really mean that, and I'm not just saying that. So everyone, please, I'm so thrilled on this very first real episode of the Empower Show to sit back and listen to the great Byron Katie and our wide-ranging hour-long interview. I think it's really going to leave a profound impact on you. Here she is, Byron Katie. Oh, it's my honor to welcome the lovely and amazing Byron Katie. Katie, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Oh, it's my privilege.
Well, I know your body of work so well. I have the book here in my hand, Loving What Is. I've read all of your works, and they're tattered and dog-eared, and I know your story. But for our audience that might not be familiar with your story and how you came to this way of thinking, this place of discovery and inquiry, take us back to when you first uncovered the pain in your life and how you began to wrap your head around it, this whole new way of thinking and seeing the world.
Well, you know, it was a depression that I had no way out of it. It seemed to me at the time I tried everything that I was hopeless, that I was stuck and I was entertaining suicide a lot. And then there was this moment that I was actually sleeping on the floor because my self-esteem was so low, I didn't believe I deserved a bed. That's how far down I had become. So I'm sleeping there all night long like we all do. We go to bed at night, we sleep, we wake up in the morning. But what was different about this morning is actually a bug crawled over my foot. I was in a dead sleep. A bug crawled over my foot. I opened my eyes, and the depression was gone. Completely, completely gone. In fact, there was nothing in my mind. There was just nothing available to my mind. It was like everything was new. It was like a new world. And I wasn't thinking this is some kind of miracle. I was just seeing, it was like seeing a place where I had never been before. Now, what is valuable, that doesn't seem like, it seems very odd as I tell it. But what's important about that moment is that I noticed that when my mind started working, as usual, my mind started working, I saw that what I was believing wasn't true. I saw in that moment what I pass on to the world, that, you know, anyone suffering in the world, is that when we believe our thoughts, we suffer. And when we don't believe them, when we question them, we don't suffer. And again, I've come to see this is true for every human being. And that experience was almost 30 years ago. And so as a skeptic, I'm still testing, but I have worked I couldn't name the number, but that works for everyone whose mind is open to it. It's just a way to question the mind. And Socrates said, you know, an unquestioned life is not worth living. And in my case, that was really true. I had no idea that, I thought if I believed it, it was true. And then when I began to question my thoughts, oh my goodness, the freedom. So what happened was in that moment, I wasn't believing anything. And I had this revelation that freed me. And in the meantime, has freed just thousands and thousands of people. According to them, I certainly wouldn't make the judgment.
So in that moment, you see this bug crawling across your foot. Did you realize this paradox? I've heard stories, for instance, the author of The Power of Now, of course, Eckhart, you know, he talks about that moment of thinking of killing himself in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
And waking up with this awareness of this sort of paradox, I guess, between the pain and the non-pain.
It's so radical. It's another world. It's like going from one world to another, a pain of suffering to a pain of freedom from suffering.
When you look back on that time, because I first heard this story years ago on a person who touched my life, I'm sure touched yours as well, and who recently passed away, Dr. Wayne Dyer.
Yes.
That was for how I first learned of your story. I was in Florida many years ago and listening to an interview that you were doing with him and talking about that story.
Mm-hmm.
When you look back on that, do you look back with any sort of judgment on that pain now? I mean, when that first happened, did you have a lot of judgment about it, and did it dissipate? But now when you look back on it, is it different?
It wasn't – when it first happened, the pain wasn't available to me. It was just gone. When I look back, you know, when I look back at it, I experience nothing but gratitude. It shows me that when I believe my thoughts, I suffer. But when I question them, I don't suffer. And it also shows me that for me, there is no other choice. We believe it or we question it. We believe it or we don't. And if we're believing something that hurts, and by that I mean stresses us out to the point where we're not kind to ourselves, we're not kind to other human beings, we're feeling guilty. You know, those are thoughts that need to be identified in my experience, in my own life, and questioned. And so that's my practice.
And so the practice becomes what you've called the work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I want to go through the process, but a little bit later in the show, I want you to take me through it. I'll be the guinea pig because I've got a lot of – well, I came to this project – as my audience now knows and having written about it, this breakdown. But as you talk about, on the other side of a breakdown, we have breakthroughs.
Yes, very good.
And it was not that long ago. It was about a month ago. And I'll tell you a little bit about it, and maybe a little bit later in the show I'll get out there on the gurney and have you take me through the work,
okay,
all the different processes. But about a month ago, I just had a big breakdown. I had spent most of my life – and I still feel these tendencies now, which is why I think it'd be helpful for our audience to hear me go through it, and they can, you know, see it in their own eyes. But chasing other people, fear of money, fear of lack in my life. You know, that even though I had reached a certain level of success, I would still hear the negative, the fear-based thoughts that, that I don't have enough or that I'm not good enough. The sort of hating of myself.
Yes.
Take us through, not just me yet, but what is the process of the work? And how long after the bug crawling across your foot did you come to sort of codify this methodology where you could see that it was four simple steps?
Well, I saw it immediately. I saw that when I was asleep on the floor, there was nothing to my consciousness. Now, an onlooker would say, there's a woman asleep on the floor. But in my consciousness, I was asleep. There was nothing. I wasn't dreaming, so there was nothing. So when I experienced the bug crawling over my foot, I opened my eyes, and I wasn't thinking anything, so all the pain was gone. Hmm. So I saw the next experience was I experienced like everything all of a sudden had a name. And then it, you know, maybe there was I looked out the window, there was a tree and, but I saw it without a name. It wasn't a tree. So I could see really that when I believed my thoughts, the entire world was created. There was a window. There was a me. There was light. There was a roof, a ceiling. I was indoors and a wall. And it was the mind had just spun all of this out.
Was it beautiful for the first time, some of these things?
It was beautiful because I didn't put another story onto them. So it was just this perfect world created. So I saw in that moment that when I, the simple version is each of us create the world we believe we live in, but that doesn't mean that's the way things are. Like, for example,
so our own stories. We can be full of crap.
Completely. Full of crap. And right. Basically, I believed me up.
You believed you were miserable.
I believed me up. And even my children, they weren't who I believed them to be. They were my children. And that sounds a little strange, but maybe one of them, I talk about it in the book. Maybe I had the thought they should pick up their socks. Well, every day the socks were on the floor.
Right.
So what I was believing about my children, that became my child.
Whereas, he was the sockless, or the child that never picked up the socks.
He didn't mind. He didn't listen to his mother. He was disrespectful, and he's trying to make my life harder, and he doesn't respect how hard I work. And that wasn't my child. My child was at school. I had no idea, you know. How do I say this more simply? There was my son. It was one of my sons. There was my son, and then there was who I believed my son to be. Those were two different sons. So through inquiry, I see my children today clearly. I don't have to put a story on them. So what I have are three beautiful, perfect children, grown children with five amazing grandchildren. And my mind is not capable of believing anything less than what is true to my heart, which is, my goodness, I feel like I'm doing a lot of talking here, Clayton.
No, you know, I want. No one wants to hear me.
if I look at myself, okay, let's put it over there. If you look at yourself and you compared and you could not compare you with anyone, there was no way for you to compare you with anyone. Are you okay? Are you perfect? Do you have enough money? Are you beautiful? If you did not compare yourself with anyone else?
Lately, I've been thinking about this. I mean, after this breakdown and breakthrough, as it were, you know, this idea, I'm a fan of history. I was a student of history in college, and I love like the Wild West and the 1800s, and this idea of comparison. I've always struggled with that, you know, that I've, oh, if this guy, he's doing all of these things, I should probably be doing that as well. And he's making this amount of money, so therefore I should probably be doing that as well. In the 1800s, this idea that you had a farm and then hundreds of miles away might be your nearest neighbor. You would know nothing of comparison to those people. And you might be fine with your family on that ranch. And you would know nothing of comparing yourself to somebody else.
So you'd be absolutely fine if you did not compare yourself with your neighbors.
Right.
And it's not wrong. It's just that we fall short when we compare.
Right.
So let's say you're in a room all alone and there's no one to compare you with. But what's going on is you're seeing image of other people and they're more handsome. They're wiser. They have more money. They are certainly more attractive in every way. So those are just images in our head.
Right.
And then we believe what we believe about those images in our head as though they were real people. And they're not. That is pure imagination. But the ego doesn't stop there. It compares. You compare your life with the images in your head and depression happens. So we compare. We don't even need a real life body to compare with. So if the listeners don't get anything more out of this than just the intrigue of noticing what you're thinking and believing, and if you didn't compare that with you, are you perfect? That's an amazing practice just to notice.
So a couple of housekeeping things for the audience. When you mention inquiry, what do you mean by inquiry?
To identify what you're thinking and believing anytime you're depressed, stressed out, you've had an argument with someone that you care about or someone you work with. Anytime you're stressed out, in other words, to identify what you were thinking and believing in that moment the argument took place, we'll say argument, what you were thinking and believing, identify that, write it down, and then question every assumption on the worksheet. And on the work.com, that worksheet, you just push print and it's yours.
And we'll make sure we have a
available
link. Yeah, we'll have a link to that definitely in the show notes. The work.com, it cannot get easier than that. And just print it out. Now, the work itself, the question, so inquiry, being aware that you're having these thoughts and these questions about your life and these stresses and anxieties, and you're writing them down, then taking that next step to go through the work. What is the first step?
Okay, the first step, of course, to identify what you were thinking and believing in those moments you were stressed out. So there you have the situation. Let's say I was arguing with one of my children. And let's say I was very upset. Okay, so I know from experience that my child did not upset me. What I was thinking and believing about my child in those moments, that's what upset me. Okay, so this is a wonderful thing to understand because I have all the power now. I don't need my child to free me. I've collected what I was thinking and believing about my child. And again, that was the source of my anger. So now it's written on the worksheet or just, you know, on a piece of paper. And so now I'm going to question. Let's say I'm angry at my son because he didn't listen to me. So then the first step of inquiry is I question it. Is it true? That's the first question. There are only four. Is it true?
Such a powerful question.
Oh, it's medicine.
Mm-hmm. It really
is. There's nothing that question can't heal in our lives if we just get still and allow ourselves to be shown.
Right, like the idea.
Is it true?
I've heard you take you go to prisons and work with prisoners.
They're amazing. They're amazing. I was just in Soledad again, and all those men they're amazing. They're facilitating each other. They're actually facilitators for the work inside the prison as inmates. It's just, they're really.
So the question that someone might say in prison, you know, that my dad was never around, my dad didn't love me, something like
yeah.
that.
Yes.
Is that true?
Is that true? And then they might contemplate for that and say, yes, it's true. And then I would ask the second question, can you absolutely know that it's true? Your father didn't love you. And then that would give them another opportunity to look at it. And at that point, their answer would be yes or no. So we're looking for our own truth here, not someone else's, no right or wrong. We're looking for our own. This is where we take our own mind back. And then the third question, how do you react? I would ask him, how do you react? What happens when you think the thought your father doesn't love you? And then at that point, and I ask your listeners now to just contemplate when you have experienced that thought, he doesn't love you. Can you absolutely know that it's true? And then just get still and you'll notice maybe your heart starts beating more quickly. Maybe you notice it feels like your blood pressure is rising. You notice that in that moment you begin to accuse the person. Maybe you feel guilty after that. You see yourself as a victim. You see your siblings being loved and you're left out. I mean, these have horrendous repercussion when we believe the thought. And we really think it's our father that didn't love us that is the cause of our problem, when actually it's what we're thinking and believing in the moment. And it has to be, because right here, right now is where we're experiencing the stress. So I would ask the inmate the fourth question, who would you be without the thought? Just now consider who you would be without the thought your father doesn't love you. And then as they contemplate that, it's the difference of night and day. So again, it's the same experience I experienced on the floor, and almost 30 years ago. Gives everyone that opportunity.
That's amazing. And we're going to go through this with me just in a little bit here to go through. I've got a list of a few questions that we can take me through on the work that led to my breakdown, things I'm still grappling with, and I feel those tendencies come back on a daily basis. I have, you know, a bunch of questions related to the work, but just on your body of work and when you've worked with individuals over the years. You know, human beings are resource gatherers by our nature, right? And sex, money, currency, those are the things that we go after, right? Wars have been fought over just those three things.
Yeah.
So how do we keep calm and focused and centered when one person, for instance, the idea of chasing someone else, is gathering resources in your face? And how do we deal with that as a human being it's our true nature as creatures, as human beings?
You know, if I am not, if I don't understand why a person would gather resources, then I better take another look at myself. You know, if for me to, I think the short version is, if I'm not happy for that person, what is it about me that is off?
So someone gathering branches to make a hut and to provide shelter for his or herself, you should find joy that they're building shelter for themselves.
Yes, and let's say they're taking all the branches and I don't have any. There is something wrong with me if I am not happy for them. And as a free human being, I can ask questions like, can we share the hut? Or would you help me find more? Or is a way that we could work through this so we can both have shelter? And that person will say yes or no. And I wouldn't assume that that's all the wood that there is. If he would not give any of it up, I'm happy for him. He's safe. He's warm. He's secure. You know, I'm secure in that. And so now I'm free to go find wood. But what I can tell you, Clayton, is that in my own experience, if I can't find wood, there's something better out there.
Right.
When our mind is clear, we don't, you know, wanting and needing is unnecessary because we are sane enough to see everything we need is right here, right now. And in my life, that is beyond theory. I've tested it. And anyone can test it and find the same thing. And many people are today.
If someone's just experiencing a breakthrough in their lives like you were, obviously it might have been difficult, I think, for your family at the time to see this new mom.
It was.
And new wife. Well, who is this person now I'm living with?
Yeah.
What was that like?
Yeah, it was really difficult for them. And there was not a lot I could do about that except assure them that I was okay and live a life that was very clear, more than clear, that I was okay. It was as though I had the same body, but there was there was something else living in that body that they absolutely did not recognize. I mean, where was the depressed mother? And who was this woman, energized? And I mean, where's the depression? I'm out in the world. I'm in service. I'm answering the phone. And I was agoraphobic all those years. And so the doors are open. The windows are open. It was a bit unsettling for them.
Did it completely vanish, those old tendencies, or did they come back? And how did you deal with, if they did come back, any of that self-doubt?
The work. In other words, I identified what I was thinking and believing in those times, and I questioned it using those four questions and opposites.
Powerful.
That's simple. If it were not simple, I wouldn't be here, or I'd be in my bedroom depressed.
What is joy to you?
A sane state of mind where I'm not comparing you with me, where I'm connected, and it's a fearless state of mind. It's a fearless life. It's all about, it's as though we're living ourselves as a utility, because that's what's left. There's no, without fear, that's what we are. It's all about, how can I help?
Do you feel ebbs and flows? You know, that there might be people who are tied to material things, and when they get those material things, that brings them what they think is joy, but it's not really joy. So are there, when you have this contented state of mind, do you have significant ebbs and flows?
It's pretty much the end of something like that. You know, where ebbs and flows become fascinating, because an ebb and a flow are nothing more than what we're thinking, a product of what we're thinking and believing in the moment. So that is the cause of ebb and flow. And when you understand the cause of everything, if you're not comfortable with those ebbs and flows, you can identify what you're thinking and believing and question it, and then you're balanced again. So for me, the physical pain is just fascinating to this inquisitive state of mind, and I understand enough about it through my own experience to see that even physical pain is a projection of mind, and so that makes it fascinating. And, you know, I see that pain is always on its way out, never on its way in. and can get even closer to it. And yet it still appears to be the case sometimes. And so the journey doesn't end, but it becomes a source of for pure fascination as opposed to an enemy. Pain isn't something that I like everything else, that I don't welcome. You know, it's when it's time for it, here it comes. But it's you know what I'm saying when you ask me, I'm trying to answer honestly, and I'd say that is about all that's left to deal with, and it's not terrible. It's fascinating. It's gone from something, you know, that I dread to just fascination. Really fast. You want to hear an example?
Sure.
I you know, those blenders that you hold it in your hand and then you put it in the cup and the blade shreds the ice and everything.
Those immersion blenders?
Yeah.
I know that from my wife.
And I love that thing. And I had made the frozen drink and I pulled it out and then I put my hand inside where the blade is to scrape out the bowl there. But my other hand automatically hit the button.
Oh no.
When I was trying to balance the thing. And so it looked like it went through the fingernail. It looked like it went through the bone. And it's just, and there were several cuts, maybe 8 or 10. And the blood was amazing. But in that moment, it was so fascinating. I didn't think that hurts. That's painful. I waited for it to show me. And it just didn't happen. So that's what I mean by fascination. I saw that even pain is a projection of mind. That's pretty powerful. And yet, I'm not crazy. I put a compress on it, call the doctor,
right.
Go to the doctor. He says, that's beyond even what stitches can take care of. And
wow.
We don't know if we'll lose the finger or not, but we're going to do this. So he just basically did nothing but put another bandage on it and gave me direction to change it a couple of times a day. And I was in the middle of a 9-day school there, and that's from early morning till evening and every day for 9 days. And I didn't miss a beat.
Wow.
And in the meantime, you know, there's this big bandage on my, that reminds me, it's like I remember when my mind would move into the past just enough and the future just enough to create pain. And it's nothing I'm doing on purpose. The work is a practice. Inquiry is a practice. And yes, there are ebbs and flows. It's a practice.
And so because you led me there, this idea of slipping into the pain of the past or the perceived pain of the future, things that don't exist, because you and I are talking now, none of that exists. How do we use the work to combat those fears and anxieties of the past and the future?
Well, any time I feel stressed, I am in the past or future. So I identify what I'm thinking and believing in that past or future, put it on paper, and then I question it. I use those four questions and turnarounds to question it. And it's freeing. It's completely freeing because each of us is finding our own information, our own truth, and we're not being told or taught by other people, which is very powerful. But there are those times when we need to know, you know, what is the expression? Know thyself.
Part of knowing yourself, I'm sure, is being in touch with your ego. And how do you deal with ego? from your humble beginnings, I mean, a number of years ago, your incredible interviews with Oprah Winfrey, for crying out loud. And I watched those great videos where you took her through the work. How do you go from—
She was amazing, wasn't she? Wasn't she humble and dear and—
She is amazing, and she's a lifelong learner, which is what's so amazing about her. How do you deal with, you know, you're in your hotel that morning, then you're Byron Katie, you go to Oprah's studios. How do you battle that sense of self-worth that you feel like you feel like I'm puffed up. I'm Byron Katie in Oprah's studios and I'm somehow better than I was an hour ago when I was just at the hotel. And how do you remain steady through that whole process?
Because that none of that happened to me. It's like I go to, let's say, to that studio as a student, not as a teacher.
And as a listener.
I go to learn. I'm a listener. I'm a student. I don't go to teach.
Wow.
And that's what I love about the, and I don't go to impress or I haven't practiced. I haven't, you know, none of that, because whatever this is, for better or for worse, is authentic. And so I'm just open to everything. And I learned a lot there. For example, on what I just shared about you, that I met a mind there in Oprah that was, it didn't matter how many viewers were watching, she was fearless. And we all are when our minds are open enough. That's all it takes, an open mind.
Hmm. Well, how does ambition fit into that? You know, well, is it okay? How do you balance if we are to accept what is, loving what is ambition opposite of that?
It is. In my life, it's unnecessary. I mean, if you have everything you want and need, I mean, right here, right now, if you were aware of it, it would be crazy to, you know, the trick is to want what you have, not what you don't have. One is crazy. One is not.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what happened to me in my breakdown, this chasing, right? It was my wife finally turning to me and in tears coming down my face and realizing that everything's okay right now, that I have everything I need.
Yes. That's it. See, to me, that's just like, that is just, I mean, how does knowledge get any better than that? Because that is true in every moment without exception, whether the tears are running down our face or not. What we're thinking and believing cost us the awareness of we have everything we want and need, truly.
So is there a difference then between that and passion? For instance, I love broadcasting since I was a little kid. I love the idea of, you know, this medium of communicating since I was a little kid in my basement pretending to, you know, to make videos with my best friend. Mm-hmm. And that led me to this life. But
see, that's your joy. That is what I mean by being a utility, a service. It's your joy. But what you're thinking and believing along the way, you know, it's there's an identity you've developed, like the way you describe me going into the studio. You know, I'm Byron Katie. I don't even know that. I don't even, you know, that's a rumor.
but yet you, I mean, I've seen you on social media too. And so we're in this interesting world and, you know, in the mid 2015, 2016 world where we're hyper connected and we're aware of those interactions, to go back to that 18th century idea on the farm, right? We mm-hmm. put something out into the world. You obviously want it to have an impact, right? And if you jump
no.
on social media,
no.
no, you don't.
No, no.
You want it?
I don't want it to have an impact, or I don't want it or not want it. I leave that to everyone else. In other words, like we're talking now, what it means to you is what it means. And what it means to me is what it means. I'm learning from you a lot about myself. I mean, that's all this interview is about. And you giving that gift, that and it was a gift. You loved it. You love broadcast. That's your gift. But it brings what it brings. And, you know, I just keep going back to myself. It brings what it brings. And I'm expanding. The mind is unlimited. And I'm taking it to the wall. It's beautiful. Anything I would experience as fear, I would identify the thoughts that are causing the fear and then do the work with it.
How do you, and I know I have this question from a very close friend of mine, how do you square that, the idea of no ambition for just allowing, with living a life just sitting on a park bench staring at birds all day?
Sooner or later you get up.
Right.
You know, sooner or later you get up. And if your mind is clear, you can just, you know, it's like I challenge you to sit on a park bench as long as you can. Sooner or later, you get up.
Right.
Or someone moves you. It's nothing you have to do. It's all done for you.
And then when you sit down at your computer or your workspace and you're doing an intentional work that you're passionate about, it's not based on ambition. It's just based on a joy.
You love what you're giving. It's fulfilling. And there's nothing to stop you because fear is the only thing that can stop you. And what you're thinking and believing is the cause of fear. You know what to do with that.
Do you see any commonalities among all the many thousands and thousands of people that you've counseled and worked with, commonalities around fear?
Yes. They're believing thoughts like these. I want, I need, I'm angry because, they should, I shouldn't, and I don't ever want to, and that's about it. It's just, you know, it's all on that judge your neighbor worksheet. We just fill it in, and it's the entire story right there that clearly shows us the cause of suffering one human being to another. If there is a problem in my family, I look to myself. And that solves it.
Oh, it's so easy in the family to blame others and to pawn it off on somebody else for your discomfort.
And if we can't do it in our family, how can we do it in the world? And how can we expect world leaders to make any change in the world if we cannot do it within our families? So that's where we start.
Do people ever question you? I mean, what are some of the difficult questions that you get from people who sit there, you know, harumph with their arms crossed? Like, I'm sure you experienced this in prison and you've talked about this. I heard in an interview where you don't say a word and you'll just walk through this room of prisoners and you don't say a word. And then it just takes one person to start cracking and then the whole room opens up. But do people, you know, what are the objections that you get to the work?
Some people say it's just too simple and that's okay with me. And then some people say the work doesn't work, and that's okay with me too. And the reason it's okay with me is we have to answer those questions before it can work. And I understand how terrifying the ego finds, as straight on, is it true? That's pretty terrifying. So I really admire people who can get quiet in these four questions. It's the most courageous thing we can do, actually.
The inquiry process.
Oh boy. You know, it every time we do that, our identity shifts. It's like a snake shedding skin. It's just, it's just layer after layer of who am I, that question being answered.
Do people ever think that loving what is somehow complacency?
You know, I don't get complaints. It's odd, you know, through my email, I don't get complaints. I get a lot of gratitude. And that doesn't mean there's not a lot of complaints. I have heard people say they've thrown it against the wall a couple of times, but they always find themselves picking it back up again. I think a lot of people don't understand it. They're just, you know, we have to be very open to such a confrontation ourselves with ourselves.
Do people ever feel, I guess when I ask about ambition or sort of sitting on the park bench and we accept what is, and if we're true with ourselves and we say, you know what, we're flat broke, I don't have a roof over my head, and if I just accept that, then I'm just being complacent in my life, and that's where I'm at, and that's okay.
Well, you know, there are two ways. And I'll use the park bench thing. There are two ways to sit on the park bench. Are you content or are you miserable? And that's the same as if you're running a marathon, you're broadcasting, or you're sitting in on a couch with Oprah. It's the same. Are you happy? Are you at peace? Are you happy or at peace, or are you conflicted? Are you unhappy? That's it.
Right. What about children? I know this is a question my wife had. She said, you've got to ask Katie about children. Because yesterday we had my son, he's wearing a patch right now over his one eye. He had, I think it was called the amblyopia, I think, as a child, where his one eye is not as strong as his other. So mm-hmm. they have to patch it for, you know, like a year or so to strengthen it, to get it.
Mm-hmm.
So he has to wear it for a couple hours a day. And I was dropping him off at school, and I had usually he wears it 2 hours before school and then in the evening. And we just forgot to take it off. It wasn't any sort of nefarious plot.
Yeah.
And he's five, and he went in, and for the first time, like, classmates, and it's a very loving school, but one classmate saw it and kind of pointed at him across the room and said, "What's on your eye?" And he later that day told us that it had made him sad.
Yeah.
That, "Oh, Daddy, you forgot to take off my patch," and a student pointed it out. So how do you talk to children and teach them to love what is around and do the work with the children?
Well, you know, I come out of my own clarity like every parent. That's the best we can all do. So if my child said, you know, "Mommy, this boy at school pointed, said, you're wearing a patch, and I felt really sad." Then I might say, "Well, sweetheart, you know, you were wearing a patch. The little boy just noticed what's true. And what made you sad?" Now, see, he'll start telling you what made you sad. You know, he was thinking and believing something. And out of your clarity, you know, reality, the little boy was just pointing out, you know, what's true. You were wearing a patch. What makes you sad? Out of your clarity, they're completely safe to tell you what they were thinking and believing, because they're not fearful. They can see it clearly. So out of your clarity, they get clear. But what some parents might do is say, "Oh, honey, I'm sorry you're sad. And I'm sure that little boy didn't mean anything by it. And I'm sure he just was surprised to see," you know, we go on and on and on with.
Right.
Other than the little boy was right. You were wearing a patch. And what makes you sad?
That's great, because I did a mixture of both of those yesterday with my response. It was,
yeah,
you know, I said that first part, but then I also then kind of went on with what he must have been thinking. you know.
Yeah, and which is simply what you were thinking.
Right.
Putting it on him as opposed to right. to just that first part and then listening to your son. But it comes with practice. It comes with practice. And our children give us our practice. That's for sure.
They do. And you mentioned the socks earlier. And just one more question about children. And then we're going to do the work here before we wrap it up. And I'll get you out of here on that. The idea, though, the socks, you said, you know, picking up the socks. And, you know, what if your little kid says, and I'm just making something up, oh, I don't want to go to school. And every day my child says, I don't want to go to school. But you know that you're paying for that child to go to school, so they must go to school. If you accept what is, then that child might never go to school. What do you say to that kind of exchange?
Well, there are all kinds of, you know, there are different perceptions of what is, of course. What is my child saying he doesn't want to go to school. Mm-hmm. And he hasn't said he's not going. So I probably just pick up his lunch pail and say, honey, I hear you don't want to go to school. Let's talk about it. In the car.
On the way to school.
On the way to school.
Right. I love that.
But as we get clear, we can really hear and we don't put something on it. Like he said, I don't want to go to school. He didn't say he wasn't going. So it's like, honey, let's hurry. And on the way, I want to know why you don't want to go to school. This is really important to me. And I know what that feels like. I really relate to it. There were days I didn't want to go to school too. And I was your age, in fact. You know, I'd say things like that if they were true. So let's talk about it. We have so much in common. This is even exciting.
Right. Is there, when you talk to religious folks, is there an absolute truth?
You know, every person has to decide for themselves. But for me, I want to know for myself what's true. Not what people say to be true. Even though they could be right, I've got to know my own. Otherwise, it's not authentic. It's secondhand. And I just have to know. Hmm. I have to know. And it really leaves me in a state of balance where I can hear other people that say it is exactly this way or that way. And then I can compare without having to change, you know, what I believe, without having to change their mind. Right. And in that, they grow me. I see other ways of seeing and possibilities, which is the opposite of war.
So true. Instead of trying to force your opinion on that person to change.
Because it's ridiculous. It can't be done. It just causes war. And I'm the one that started it. So that's not okay.
Well, I'd love to dive into just a few questions here around the work and be out there on the gurney and let you take me through this.
Okay.
I've listened and done it so many times to myself hearing your talks that to have you here on the show and to not do this would be I'd be remiss if I didn't. So, you know, in this breakdown about a month ago, or at the end of mid to end of August, and when my wife had finally said, you know, what are you chasing?
Yeah.
And you know, my dad growing up, he'd be the type that he would feel like he had to, if there was some new book or self-help book or something for business and someone had told him about it, even at dinner in the midst of like a birthday party, he'd get up and have to run to Barnes and Noble right now to grab it and say, that, you know, you're leaving, why are you know, what are you running from? What are you chasing after? And so I feel like I've picked up a lot of that chasing. Mm-hmm. And so this like fear of not being able to provide or not being okay in just the present moment, you know, living the past and living in the future. So for me, it's why, you know, I'm always chasing something. Maybe that's the first problem that I confront is, you know, why is it I'm always why am I always chasing something?
Well, you know, we talked about comparison. Mm-hmm. You know, without comparison, there's no chasing because you're content. And then what comes to you is using that your example earlier is what fascinates me is broadcasting. you know, for example. So that's why, you know, I named the first book Loving What Is, because out of that peace of mind, I'm inspired, because my mind is not at war with being here now, and it doesn't settle for the substitution of an apparent past or future. Like, for example, if I were eating a banana, okay, so did you see an image of a banana when I said banana?
Yeah.
Okay, so I would ask you, you know, it's a banana. Is it true? Where's your proof?
Right, the image of it is...
Okay, and is that imagination or, you know, it's a past.
Hmm. Right, because
it's a past.
It's a figment of my imagination.
Yeah, now if I ask you to imagine you're holding a big juicy lemon, just to bite into it. Hmm. You see what happens?
Right. Lips pucker up.
And that's physical. Mm-hmm. So there, you didn't bite into a lemon. It was pure imagination. So that's the power you're up against. It's the imagination is everything. And just to know that is, so everything you're chasing, it comes from a past, and then you see a future, and neither one of those are true. It's just like the banana or the lemon. It becomes so real to you that it makes where you are look really small, ineffective, and lacking.
And I think one of the places that one of my big notes here to go through in the work is that I've struggled to, where I've always sort of felt unworthy, felt unworthy, and maybe from a place of not loving myself.
Okay, so you're unworthy. Let's look at that. Let's just walk it through the work. So you're unworthy. Is it true? Like, find a situation where that's true, that you're unworthy.
I guess, you know, sometimes, like, if I'm not, a great dad, not a great husband, maybe not great professionally, I'm unworthy in those situations.
Okay, so you're unworthy as a father. Is it true? Can you absolutely know that it's true? You're unworthy as a father.
No.
Now notice how you react. What happens when you believe the thought, I'm unworthy?
I lower my head. I feel dejected. That I'm going to, you know, screw up my children somehow. That, you know.
Okay, so you saw images, and then you felt those emotions. You saw images of past and future in your head, and just like the banana, just like the lemon, you saw imagination, past and future, you as a failure as a father, as a failure in the future. You see them?
Yeah.
And then you felt, let's call it a depression, a lacking, an unworthiness. So now the fourth question, you know, it's a movie, Clayton. It's a movie. Hmm. It's a dream. People have heard the expression, life is a dream. That's it. Hmm. It's a banana. It's a lemon. It's an unworthy father. What did they all have in common? It was pure imagination in the moment. That's all. You watch that movie, depression. Or anxiety, whatever movie you're in, Apple, lemon, orange, banana. So now, who would you be right here, right now, or with the situation with your children? Who would you be without the thought, I'm not worthy?
I'd be a great dad, a great loving father, husband, provider.
Yes, yeah, so close your eyes and look at you with your son. Without the thought I'm unworthy, what do you see?
I see joy. Laughter.
And you see your real son. What's he doing? You know, he's not this terrible failure because you were unworthy. He's not in his 30s or 40s where you imagine him as the product of a terrible father, an unworthy father. He's this little 5-year-old boy, the real deal. Not an imaginary son, but the son you've got.
You say in the book, because I think it's so instructive, and we can end on this because that was so powerful, this idea of the turnarounds in action.
Yeah.
And you say the self-realization is not complete until it lives as action.
Yeah, self-realization has no power until it lives as action. So I'm not worthy as a parent. What's the opposite of that?
I'm worthy as a parent.
Yes, because you're seeing your son for who he is, not the son of a past and future. You're worthy to see clearly the difference between imagination and reality. And when you're in reality, everything that needs to get done can get done because you're present. You're not operating out of fear. Out of that movie, your son simply says, Dad, I felt sad at school today because my classmate said I was wearing a patch. You can deal with that. You're not in the past and future where he's hurt and he's going to not want to go to school tomorrow and all of that. It's, you know, in the moment. In fact, you don't even have to do any of that. It's just you listen.
One final thought I had. A close friend of mine is waiting for this big business deal to go through, and he's just been miserable the whole week. And he's saying on Thursday, hopefully this will go through, and it'll be such a relief. And when it happens, you know, and I said, and then what?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Boy, and that in then what, with a mind like that, is something's going to stop it. You know, the company's going to go bankrupt before we can get this, before the blah, 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 it just goes. Oh, my gosh. It's, you know, living in the past and future is, if you want a little fear and terror, get a future. If you want a little depression, get a past. If you want to be just creative, high functioning and serve your family and the world, and that can be done in the present. It's the only place we ever have done anything. It's just, are we asleep or awake?
I love it. Well, what a powerful hour, and I just thank you so much for spending it with us and guiding us through this. I think it's going to help so many people. Where can people, I know we're entering the fall of this year and you're constantly traveling, I'm sure. Where can people connect with you, find you, maybe come to one of your live events?
At the work.com, and it's It's everything that I have of value, anything of value, is free on thework.com. Also, we have a helpline where the facilitator's there, no charge. They don't ask you for your email address, none of it. They just do the straight-up work with you. And we have certified facilitators all over the world, and I think like 37 different languages that wow. are available to work with people. But thework.com, and it's all there. And, you know, let there be peace.
Well, the lovely and beautiful Byron Katie, it's been an honor today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Clayton.
Wow, my thanks to Byron Katie for just an amazing interview. I was emotionally, I don't want to say exhausted, but I just felt so alive and fearless after that interview with Byron. And I hope, she goes by Katie, but I hope that you've gotten as much out of it as I did in delivering this interview. If you have any questions, I'd love to hear from you. Come over to our website and join our great community over there at ClaytonMorris.com. And tell me what these interviews are meaning to you as each week as we deliver new episodes to you. So you can expect new episodes every Monday morning so that you can carry them through your entire week, listen to them multiple times, share them with loved ones. It really means the world. So thank you. This was our first official interview. We're going to be back next week with another great interview. I'm super excited to bring Todd Henry onto the show next week. He's the author of the book Louder Than Words. And he talks about how to harness the power of your authentic voice, not only in your life, but in your business. It's a truly great interview, and Todd is such a genuinely nice guy. In fact, we've become friends now as a result of the show. So, and I'm excited to have coffee with him soon. That's the type of, you know, type of relationship we had on the show. So until next week, thank you for subscribing to Empower. Check out the Todd Henry interview next week, and go and check out Byron Katie's book, Loving What Is. I'm telling you, it'll change your life. Thanks, everyone.